The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas. Later on in the show, for the first time since Liverpool suffered that 7-2 drubbing at the hands of Aston Villa, Stevie Nicol will be here to react. Plus, Danny Higginbottom continues to defend his man Ollie and says it's not his fault. After United, of course, humiliated by Spurs at Old Trafford. But we start with the transfer window closing today. Julian Laurent and Gab Marcotti with us. Often the case, boys, it's the signings that aren't done that maybe grab the headlines over those that did. We've been talking all summer about Jadon Sancho to Manchester United. And for the last 48 hours, we talked about the possibility of Dembele moving from Barca to Old Trafford. Neither will happen, Gab Marcotti. Why not?
Well, I think in the Sancho case, hey, look, here are two clubs that kept their word, Manchester United and Borussia Dortmund. Dortmund said, we have a price and we're not in a hurry to sell. And if we have to wait a year, we'll wait a year. United saying, we have a valuation and we think it's going to come down. And if we don't get him at the price we want this summer, we'll get him next summer. I think it's as simple as that with Sancho. I think Dembele, like, this was something where Barcelona wanted to offload wages, needed to offload wages. They offloaded some wages, of course, Rafinha leaving, Vidal leaving, Suarez leaving. And they hoped to maybe shift Dembele as well when they watched the news and saw that, you know, United were looking for a winger. But I'm not sure how genuinely interested United actually were in Dembele or whether that ever really got off the ground.
I love the fact you could have Barcelona flicking the channels, go, wait, what? United need a winger. And of course, this had significance, didn't it, Jules, with regards to the Depay move to Barca, which Ronald Koeman was so desperate for, he made it public. He said it on TV.
Yes, that's right, but they knew the rule, like everybody else, like all of us. It was one out, one in. That was the way La Liga operated in this transfer window. You could sell one player, then you could bring one in, and we're talking proper sell, not just Vidal leaving or Rakitic leaving for free or pretty much for free. The pie was going to cost them 30 million euros. They would have to sell someone for at least that amount or around that amount or even a bit more, and if there was no Dembele sell from the beginning, we've been saying, then the pie won't come. The pie was waiting at the airport in Lyon, ready to go with his bag in his luggage, and that call never happened because Barca were unable to sell. And I think it's a shame because Depay was really desperate to join Koeman. Koeman felt, I disagree, I think Gab disagree, it made no sense for me to sign Depay, but Koeman certainly felt and thought that Depay could be a good addition to this Barcelona squad. But in the end, he was going to stay at Lyon, and I really don't think he wanted that.
So that signing didn't go ahead. However, Cavani is now officially a Manchester United player, Gab. Now, where do we stand on this? Great goal scorer that they needed to boost the squad, or an aging player who'd been shopped around to every single club and only Manchester United were willing to pay for him?
Well, I think with Cavani, he was shopping, he was offered to everybody, been shopped around to everybody, and I think a lot of clubs would have taken him on a free transfer, but he had absurdly high wage demands, and his agents had absurdly high commission demands. Now, the problem with those demands is, and I think this is one situation where, for all the criticism that United have received, I think this appears to be, I mean, well, I say that while we don't yet have the figures, but if United said, you know what, let's call your bluff, let's wait until the last possible minute of the transfer window with the Champions League deadline, you know, being tomorrow, before we go and try to close this deal, then United played it correctly. Then United talked them down from those, you know, ridiculous 10 million euros a year net demands and whatever else, you know, with people not realizing that, you know, yeah, those might have been the wages he was earning at Paris Saint-Germain, but for the last couple of months, his wages have been zero. Mm. So if that is what happened, I think United played it correctly. I think, you know, having an older player in there, yes, he may be old, but, you know, it's not like he's signed a 10-year deal. He's an upgrade over Igalo, in my opinion, who's going to leave anyway in December. So I think that signing definitely makes sense.
Does he walk into the starting 11, Jules?
I don't think so. I mean, simply to start with, by the fact that he hasn't played football since February, and he hasn't even trained with a proper football team, with a squad, since February either. So he's certainly not fit, even if I think he kept himself fit on his own or with a fitness coach maybe when he was back in Uruguay or even back in Paris for the last few weeks. He's not ready to go into a team and play, I don't think, anytime soon. He will need a bit of time to work on his fitness, to work with the team, to work with the coaches there at United before he can even think about playing with Manchester United. Then what do you do with Martial? I still think that Martial, with the season that he had last year, with the way, you know, his relationship with Marcus Rashford, for example, or Paul Pogba, or even Bruno Fernandes, is already well established compared to Edinson Cavani. So I don't think he will walk straight in. I think Martial will still be the number one, and Cavani can certainly bring something else to that team. But Cavani will also be very much reliable and very much dependent on the rest of the team. You know, he's a poacher. That's what he does. He doesn't link up the play. He doesn't really participate in anything else but scoring goals. So if the service isn't there, he's not going to be very useful to Manchester United. So the team will have to work a lot for him and serve him well for him to be able to score, which is very different to Anthony Martial, who has a very, very different profile. It's just two different profiles, and I guess Solskjaer will have another plan, someone he can bring on or start, depending on the opposition and the games, that the way he wants them to play.
If you believe reports, Solskjaer from day one has wanted a centre-back brought in. He got a left-back in Telles. Gab, why didn't United buy a centre-back?
Well, I would assume it's because they didn't want to be taken for a ride and overspend, right? That's always the explanation that we get from, when United are questioned on this. I genuinely don't know. Jules and I have been saying it for weeks. You know, if you can't get the guy you want, or somebody actually told me, pointed out on social media, there's an old proverb that says, if you can't get the fruit from the top of the tree, get the fruit from the bottom of the tree, because you still got to eat. And, you know, when I look at this now with Chris Smalling gone as well, I look at United's options at center back. I look at the fact the transfer window's not reopening again until January. And I think to myself, man, this could be a really, really long 3 months for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. I get it. I get it that, you know, they didn't want to go and spend and overspend for Upamecano or whatever else, and they wanted to bide their time. But if you can't get that, go get a veteran, a guy who knows his way around. There were so many players out there that were available on loan or on a short-term basis, similar deal to Cavani, just to get another warm body in so that, you know, your first option off the bench wouldn't be Eric Bailly and Phil Jones and Axel Tuanzebe and Timothy Fosu-Mensah and guys like that.
How much of a dereliction of duty is this from arguably one of the biggest clubs in the world, Jules, that they've left themselves in this state?
I think it's terrible. I think it's a huge failure. I think it's a disgrace. I think it's, again, a sign of incompetence. And where I slightly disagree with Gab is that sometimes you have to overpay. I think Liverpool overpaid at the time for Virgil van Dijk. He was not worth the price they paid. And no one at that time could have, well, maybe they thought, okay, he's going to become the best. But you could not have put your house, you know, on it really at the time. So yeah, of course they overpaid, and maybe United could have overpaid for Upamecano, thinking, okay, maybe he's not worth 75 million now, but he will be in 2 years' time or even a year time because he would be that good. And sometimes that's just the way it is. You have to overpay. PSG overpaid for Kylian Mbappe, you know, that's the way it is, but now he's worth that money. And same with Virgil van Dijk, and it could have been exactly the same for United. I don't buy that. Oh yeah, they didn't want to overpay, or they didn't want to pay too much, or maybe the same for Jadon Sancho is right too. And I just think it's a huge mistake they didn't sign a proper centre back. And I think I could easily see them being haunted by the fact that they would be stuck for at least 6 months with Maguire, Bailly and Lindelof.
Meanwhile, away from Manchester United, a huge statement today from Arsenal, getting Thomas Partey in from Atletico Madrid, Jules.
I think so. I think this is a great signing. I mean, we can debate maybe another time on it was not the priority, or if it was, why did you wait so late until for doing it? Because it was a release clause you had to pay. You could have paid that at the end of July, mid-July, beginning of August, mid-August. You didn't have to wait today to pay that release clause and sign him. You could have had him from the beginning of the season. So I'm not sure what happened between Aouar, Jorginho and Partey, but in the end they got Partey. I think in terms of his profile, and if you play him well with his ball progression, his physicality, his ability technically as well, he's a wonderful signing. I don't think there's many players with his characteristic and his ability right now in world football.
Gab, how good a signing is he?
I don't know. I'm not quite as excited as Jules is, especially when I juxtapose it with his age, when I juxtapose it with a fee. Is he a better option than Elneny? Sure, but I think it was pretty clear, and I think this is the reason why they waited until the very end to get Partey, that they wanted somebody else. They wanted Aouar, and they end up with Partey because Partey's there, and you just have to plunk the money down and take him. Otherwise, it would really make no sense at all to wait until this stage. Unless maybe at the same time they're trying to negotiate something with Lucas Torreira going the other way. I don't know. That is a possibility. But all of a sudden, I don't know, for me, this team just risks having too many guys who are in their late 20s and on big money. Because I'll tell you what, he wasn't earning much money at Atletico Madrid. Mm-hmm. And so naturally, he would have gotten a big, big bump to come to Arsenal.
Jules, away from Arsenal and United, what else caught the eye today?
Well, I think today, for example, I think Everton once again showing that they've had a really good summer in terms of transfers. I think Ben Godfrey is a good young player, and yet he made mistakes at times with Norwich last season in the Premier League, but it was a league that he was discovering in a team that was not doing that well. And I think he would have learned a lot from the disappointment from last season, but I think a lot of people speak really highly of him, people who know really well close to him, and I think this is a really good signing for Everton. Robin Olsen is a good signing too, to sort of give a bit of competition to Jordan Pickford, who needs it. They also had people leaving the club, like Sandro Ramirez, for example, who everybody forgot that even he was still there, to be fair. And I think overall, they had a really, really interesting and big transfer window.
A Gab away from England, certainly the signing that caught the eye in Italy, Chiesa going to Juventus.
This was talked about for a long time. I think it's a statement for Juventus. I think it's one of those asset accumulation situations. People have talked about Chiesa playing wing back. To me, that seems a little bit like wishful thinking. Chiesa, obviously, his contract was winding down at Fiorentina. The club, I think Fiorentina had hoped to sell him abroad, but his agent's making it very clear that they wanted to stay in Italy, and the only team that could stump up the money in Italy were Juventus. It's a two-year option with an obligation to buy if certain conditions are met. These conditions are conditions that Juventus, you presume, will easily meet, like finishing top four, and then they put down the rest of the money. And if you're wondering why they did it that way, it's simple. It's because of cash flow issues.
Before we let you go, Gab, anything else caught your eye?
Oh, yeah. Ahmed Traoré, or the artist formerly known as Ahmed Traoré, now known as Amad Diallo, moving to Manchester United. The deal's not going to happen until January, but he strikes they struck the agreement with Atalanta. Now, one of the reasons this is a particularly interesting story is that there's a whole mystery behind it. The guy we thought was Ahmed Traoré, who made his debut last season in Serie A at 17, scored a goal. He's not Traoré, it's actually his last name. He came to Italy illegally, as it turns out, via somebody claiming to be his father. That man has been established was not his father, which means he's not Ahmed Traoré. He's Ahmed Diallo, as far as we know. There's a lot of lawyers who are working on this. It's not really fair to him as a young kid. There's no doubt in my mind he's going to get it sorted out. He's going to get Italian citizenship and be able to move in January. He seems to be kind of the victim in all this. But it is a pretty extraordinary and unusual case. And by the way, about this whole thing with United not spending money, they are spending money because it's a huge amount of money to spend for a guy who's only made three top flight appearances. The thing is, they're spending money on very young kids rather than established players.
Gavin Jules, as always, thank you so much for your thoughts. Just a reminder, ESPN FC back on your screens tomorrow. Be sure to join us.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Well, it was the most extraordinary of days in the Premier League on Sunday. Taking a look at some of the headlines, the Times keeping it simple, just putting 6-1 and 7-2. The Daily Star going with Super Sunday. The Express, shocker. The Mirror, surely the best at sixes and sevens. As we welcome in Danny Higginbotham, Stevie Nicol to the show. Right, boys. Stevie, where do you want to start? Which game?
Oh, well, obviously, I want to start with Liverpool.
What happened?
You know, what happened is individual errors and a basic tactical problem that Liverpool have defensively. That's it in a nutshell, but it encompasses a lot of things, though. You know, the first mistake from the goalkeeper, which ends with the ball in the back of the net, you know, it's just a goal, they'll be okay. It completely changes the psychology of the back four. You know, you could see they didn't really want to pass it back to him, which meant they were holding on to it longer. You even had Joe Gomez at times running out and running in circles and trying to beat players. That's not Liverpool. It's about passing the ball, either long or short, a couple of touches and that's it, not dribbling out from the back. And then, of course, as I said before, after the Leeds game, the defensive line is ridiculously high. And other than the first goal, where obviously Adrian's at fault, the other three come from that problem. The second one with Gomez, he's trying to hold a high line with the rest of them. He actually gets back, but horrible defending. The third, that's a deflection, comes from a Barkley run when he almost scored, running from deep through a ridiculously high line again with no pressure on the ball. And then the fourth one, again, a ridiculously high line. So, a set piece. So, individual problems, very difficult to kind of, you know, as a coach, you can't do much about that. But this ridiculous high line when it comes to defending either your opponent with the ball at his feet or a set piece, it is just completely wrong.
But they did the same against Arsenal and it worked, Stevie.
Well, but the problem is, it's a gamble, Dan. And so it worked against Arsenal, didn't work against Leeds. They had to score four against Leeds to win the game. And it certainly didn't work against Villa. We're only four games in. So there you go. So it's 50-50. Every time you step on the field right now, it's 50-50 whether it's going to work or not.
Why is it changed? Stevie?
I'll tell you why. Because somebody has decided to get clever. Liverpool, when they won the Champions League, and Liverpool last year, up until they won the Premier League, didn't have a crazy high line like that. They didn't. All of a sudden, we go from the restart, and there this high line appears. So, I think they've just tried to be a little bit cute, a little bit clever, and it's causing them all kinds of problems. They need to step back another 10 yards at least. And the other thing with the high line, your goalkeeper becomes ineffectual as a sweeper keeper because there's too much room in front of him. He can't be standing 20 yards outside the box, otherwise they'll kick it 60 yards over his head. So he then becomes not effective at all. He can't sweep in behind the back line because they're too high. So that, in my opinion, would not solve every problem, but I'll tell you what, it is a major problem.
Danny, do you agree? Maybe just stepping back from this high line would certainly solve a lot of the issues?
I think so. Yeah, we know the way that Jurgen Klopp wants to press. He wants to press high, he wants his team up the pitch. But the one thing I would say is, and don't get me wrong, obviously they conceded three goals against Leeds. I think the goalkeeper has a huge part to play, because we know that Liverpool want to play a high line, and Adrian, you know, things didn't work for him yesterday, and he's not a scratch on Alisson. But also the biggest thing is Alisson's starting position. He enables the team, he allows the team to play a higher line, because of the simple fact, if the ball's played over the top and it becomes a foot race, then Alisson's going to get there. He's going to protect the back four, whereas Adrian, he's the complete opposite. He doesn't want to come outside of his box. But the team is still playing the same way, but without one of the most important ingredients of it when you're playing that high line, which is the goalkeeper. So, you know, he's out for the foreseeable future, Alisson. So it's something that Liverpool have got to adjust quickly. And Stevie's right. It's 100%. You know, when the opposition players have time on the ball, if you haven't got a keeper that's going to come and sweep up, you have to drop deep. And it was a brilliant game plan from Villa yesterday. And they looked as though every time they went forward and they got in behind the Liverpool back four, that they could create problems. And they did.
So this isn't necessarily a one-off, Stevie, as you cited the Leeds game as well. How optimistic are you that Klopp will address this and address it quickly?
Well, I think probably the first thing he has to do is he has to make a personnel change. Joe Gomez in these two games, the Leeds game and then this game, was horrendous. You know, Fabinho came in. I know Gomez got injured, but Fabinho played with Van Dijk at centre-back against Chelsea. And it looked pretty comfortable. So I think the first thing I do is definitely make a personnel change.
Liverpool's still favourites though, Danny?
Yeah, in my mind. I think when you look at the game yesterday, it was a blip. It's concerning, yes, because the amount of goals that they conceded, but that's not going to happen week in, week out for Liverpool. So I think it was a little bit of a blip. It's been a crazy start to the season, but in my mind, you know, 100%, I still think they're the favourites, and Manchester City will be the team that run them closest.
Was it a blip for Manchester United as well, Danny?
No, not at all. It pains me to say it, but I'm being honest. It wasn't, no, not at all. It wasn't a blip. It's been a situation that they've had a problem with for a long time. You know, you look at Manchester United, and there's been this pursuit of Sancho since the season finished, even before. You know, you go back as far as January, there's talk of him coming to the club. And as good a signing as he would have been, it's not the main problem. The main problem is United defensively. Going forward, they are looking good now. They're creating problems. But the biggest problem that they've got at the moment is that we've seen United, they're trying to adapt. They're trying to change their style. They're trying to do what Liverpool and Manchester City do, which is this high press. But because they've started a little bit later than others this season, the high press isn't as quick as they want it to be. And they're getting caught out for fun at the back. You've got Stevie knows just as well as me. If you've got two centre-backs that strengths are both the same, it's no good. And that's what's happening with United. They've got centre-backs that want to go and win the ball, and none of them want to cover. And it's alarming how easily teams are getting in behind. They haven't got this sweeper-type defender. You know, I'm not saying as good, but your Rio Ferdinand type, your Cavani type. You know, players that allow one of the other centre-backs to be, you know, the one who's on the front foot trying to win the ball and then sweeping up. United centre-backs get caught on the same line, and it's just incredible how many opportunities they give away by playing such a high line when there's a lack of pace at the back.
Steve, you've been a big supporter of Harry Maguire during his time at Manchester United. What's happened?
I've been a supporter of Pogba as well. You know, I've championed him for a while, which is kind of waning. Harry Maguire, up until they played Tottenham last season, and Bergwijn made him look like a tugboat on the turn, has been horrendous. He's been horrendous. Up until then, he was the rock of Manchester United. You know, I was arguing with Robbo who were the best centre-back in the country. Was it Van Dijk and Maguire? And he was trying to tell me that Maguire was way better with the ball and this and that. But Pogba as well. I'm sorry, I was just a bigger champion of Pogba as I was of Maguire up until that Bergwijn incident. And I'm sorry, but if you're two main guys, and those two are the main players in Manchester United, if those two are absolutely horrendous, and one of them in Pogba didn't chase the whole way on the Aurier goal, you know, that's a time where it's not about stopping the goal, it's about showing 100% commitment and and trying every single thing you can to get there, knowing that you still can't probably get there, but you give it everything. And he visibly didn't, and that is not acceptable. So Manchester United's two main guys are absolutely having a horrendous time.
So how do you fix it, Danny?
Well, it looks as though it's going to be too late now for this window. I think the optimism amongst Manchester United fans going into the short break we've just had was probably the highest it's been for a long time because of how Manchester United got themselves into third place. And, you know, the supporters then were expecting to be seeing big plays coming through into the dressing room. I think the players wanted that as well. They've often spoke about it. Luke Shaw said it recently. They want more players coming in. But one thing that stands out, and I've seen it over the seasons as well, is that when Manchester United qualify for the Champions League, that summer, when they're getting prepared to play in the Champions League, they spend very little money. I think I wrote it down, it's something like in the five times they've reached the Champions League, I think they've spent over £50 million on one occasion. The three times when they've either not qualified for the Champions League or they've not got into Europe at all, they've spent £100 million each summer. That's not acceptable. You can't say, right, OK, we've qualified for the Champions League, that's good enough. You cannot do that. You've got to say, right, you want to go to the next level, but we're seeing it year in, year out, and it's happening too often to be a coincidence. And, you know, Stevie's quite right. The top players for United at the moment, they're not performing. You know, they look a yard off the pace. And I know that obviously Manchester United started a little bit later than the rest of the teams, but that's not much of an excuse. And, you know, I feel for Solskjaer. What he did last season was absolutely incredible, and he deserved to have been given the funds this summer to go and at least try and bridge the gap.
How was it absolutely incredible?
Hold on,
Danny.
A second. Dan.
Go on.
Dan.
Yeah.
Dan. Hold on a second. Danny, how can you feel bad for Solskjaer, by the way? He's the one. Number one, when you're the coach and you pick a team, whatever happens, you're responsible. But when things are going so badly wrong during the game, you have to do something. And I'll tell you what he did. He did absolutely nothing. I'm sitting there, and it's about 5-1, 4-1, whatever it was, and Manchester United are a man down, and they're still trying to play out the back. They hadn't been out their own half for about 20 minutes, and they're still trying to play out the back. Mm-hmm. It was screaming for somebody either on the sideline or one of your experienced guys on the field to say, right, hold on a second, how are we supposed to play out against a team with more men than us? So let's play the game up that half. Let's get everybody up, calm the game down. I mean, that's common sense. That's got to be basic coaching. And it never came from the sideline, and it never came from the middle of any players on the field. So you can't be sorry for Raleigh, by the way.
No,
I'm sorry.
I get that. I get that 100%, and you're quite right to say that, the substitutions yesterday. But you're telling me that Manchester United, who somehow finished third last season, clawed back an unbelievable deficit for Chelsea and for Leicester City, and then you get to this summer transfer window and you're given, what, 50 million? Is it anything like that to go and spend? You've got to remember, this is a Manchester United team that still has, in the squad yesterday against Tottenham, it had players from five different managers, and you want a challenge at the top of the Premier League. You want to be able to go and be capable. How many game changers do United have on the bench? And what I would say, probably to address it better, if I was to ask both of you, how many players from that starting 11 yesterday from Manchester United getting to Liverpool on Manchester City's team?
How many get into the Spurs team, Danny? I think it's a more relevant question, isn't it?
I'm sorry, Danny. United finished third last season. So the two teams that are ahead of them are Liverpool and Manchester City. So you're trying to bridge that gap, but you've got no players that can get into their team.
But you've just lost 5-1 to Spurs, you've just lost 3-1 to Crystal Palace. 6-1. You've got personnel that is better than the opposition, yet you're getting outplayed, which is surely something your coach needs to take responsibility for.
Yeah, he afterwards said exactly the same thing. He said, you know, there's no excuses for it. But you look at Manchester City, they got beat by Leicester 5-2. You look at Liverpool, got beat 7-2 by Aston Villa. So it's been a crazy start to the league. There isn't excuses, but what I would say is that when you look at Solskjaer, people are saying, oh, well, you know what, they need to get a proven winner in to be manager of this football club. What was Mourinho? What was Van Gaal? And they did exactly the same thing. So at some point, you have to look and say, what's the common denominator? And it's not the manager, because Van Gaal's won all there is to win. Mourinho's won all there is to win. But what did they do at United? They didn't bring Champions League glory back. They didn't bring Premier League glory back. And money was spent, but the right players were not brought in. And what we're seeing now is Cavani coming into the club. Obviously, you know, you look and you think he could be a great signing. But it's not necessarily what Manchester United need. They'll be looking and hoping that he has the Ibrahimovic effect. But for Manchester United to make the Champions League like they did last season against, in my opinion, a very, very difficult situation, you then have to go and try and go to the next level, which means you open the checkbook up and you allow the manager to go and bring some big signings in.
So does that mean that the incredible run you were talking about was a fluke?
Oh, it because meant, Stevie, the one thing I would say to you
Because at
is,
the time...
The one thing I would say, Stevie, if you got look
them,
at...
If he got them to play, right? If he got them to play in a certain way and they got results and it's the same team, it's the same players, what's happened then?
Well, what you had last season was everybody at the same time having an unbelievable stage of the season. Fernandes came in, was incredible. Rashford, when he come back from injury, unbelievable.
Just lucky.
Martial, unbelievable. And you get to the Europa League semi-final and you're getting beat 2-1 and the first attacking substitute you make is in the 87th minute. That tells you there's not a great strength in depth. So you can't expect these players to be performing all the time. Look at Liverpool yesterday. Liverpool is a prime example yesterday. They got beat 7-2. They had Salah on the pitch.
Danny Mourinho.
They had
Danny Mourinho.
Mourinho. So yesterday Liverpool had Salah and they had Firmino on the pitch. Mane wasn't playing. Look at the effect that had on the other two that were playing up front. Because as a unit, collectively, you need players to be at their best. And Manchester United, the running that they had at the end of last season, every single player was at 100%. And come the end of the season, they had nothing left whatsoever because they were playing week after week after week after week. So he needed reinforcements. I'm not saying that Solskjaer's done unbelievably well as in terms of the tactical side in the last few games.
Have I got any tissues?
But
have I got any tissues behind me here?
No, but
I'll need to wipe the tears away from my eyes, yeah.
Yeah, but no, but because what I'm saying is that people are always going after the manager. But Mourinho, world-class manager, didn't work out. Van Gaal, world-class manager, didn't work out. Well, why didn't it work out for them? Because it was the same problem. They wanted to bring players in. They weren't able to bring the players that they wanted to bring into the club. But Mourinho signed a new contract and then said he wanted to bring X, Y, and Z in. Didn't happen, and he was gone in no time. Van Gaal was sacked after he won the FA Cup. So you have to look at it and say, right, what's the common denominator here? There's been numerous managers since Sir Alex Ferguson left, but things aren't getting back on track. The same problems occur year after year after year. Manchester United's transfer window, more often than not, is the last 24 hours of a window. Your top teams have done your business by then. Manchester United haven't got a director of football. They don't have a direction in order to bring players in. It's no surprise that Liverpool do great business. Michael Edwards. No surprise Beguiristein at Manchester City. No surprise that Everton now have got a top-class director of football, bringing the right players in, helping the manager out. Where's United's help with that? Who's United's director of football? I'll tell you who it is. Nobody. They haven't got one.
But is the issue not the fact that Manchester United aren't the club that they used to be with regards to the appeal, Danny? You talk about City and Liverpool, you're going there straight away ahead of United because you know not only will you not offer that same sort of chance to win the league, you're not working under the same sort of coach that has the appeal of Pep Guardiola or the success of Jurgen Klopp. And as much as you can point to the board, most definitely they've got to take some sort of responsibility for what we've seen. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer isn't going to change the needle. For example, if an Erling Haaland is available and he meets with Sir Alex Ferguson, he's going to United.
No, I get that. I fully understand that. But do you think... So a top manager now coming into Manchester United, do you think they would get their own way? Because Mourinho didn't get his own way.
I think it would be definitely more of appeal, wouldn't it? If a Pochettino is there, I feel he has more of a draw with players than a Solskjaer because of his record and because he's achieved.
I get
Dan,
that.
Dan, can I ask Dan a question?
So I
understand part of what you're saying about wanting to bring players in, right? I can't disagree with that, yes. But the performance of that United team, the performance of the players that he has, was a gutless performance. And that is a huge, huge concern. If Manchester United go down 5 or 6-1, showing real courage and commitment and all the rest of it all around the team, then you're not questioning the manager. If your team goes around and looks a bit gutless and spineless and doesn't look like it really wants to die for you, that's got to be on the manager, surely.
Yeah, it is on the manager 100%. And that's why I said he came out yesterday after his interview and said that he's no excuses for it. No excuses whatsoever for it. You know, you get beat 6-1, but it's the same.
But that tells you about the manager, though.
We talk about Klopp, two of the best coaches in world football. One got beat 7-2 yesterday, and the other one got beat 5-2. But nobody's coming out and saying, well, that's all down to the manager.
Oh, Danny, you're better than that, though, aren't you? Surely.
Well, because it's
look at what they've done over the last couple of years.
It's the manner. No, I get that.
The manner
for me as a Manchester United supporter watching it.
Well, that's why Klopp's not getting destroyed. That's why nobody's seen Klopp out, because the manner they got beaten. And I think I've told you earlier what the problem is. It's fixable. And it's fixable without going and buying 4 or 5 players. It's fixable with the players they've got.
So do you think then, if United were to go and get a Mourinho-type manager or a Van Gaal-type manager, which they did, why were the problems still the same? Why could they not go and get the players they want? Why was it lastminute.com again? It's the same every single year, and it doesn't matter who's in charge. You can bring Guardiola if he would come.
So you're going to keep a guy.
If he would come. You ain't going to change it at the moment.
So you're going to keep it.
Not whilst they have the problem they have.
So you're going to keep a guy then whose team goes out and shows no heart for the club. So he's obviously not doing something right. And this is not the first time we've talked about them being like that under Rolly. He's had a good run. He's had a couple of horrendous runs as well.
Yeah.
So nothing's changed as far as the sort of commitment that we've complained about at United under Rolly. It's not changing.
So you don't think the second half of last season they were absolutely magnificent to finish in third?
No, they were completely rotten. Once he got the job, they were absolutely horrible.
And then they had
a good run, by the way, and they had a good run against teams that they were supposed to beat, pretty much. They had 12 games, I think it was. And every one of them were thinking, hold on, they should win this. No, they did. You can only win the game.
Manchester City
played well, and we all said they've turned the corner. And then what do they do? They start this year, and they're horrendous. They look an absolute shambles.
So, Danny...
So you're going to keep a coach who's got his team doing that?
Let's just talk about the basics here.
Yeah.
Are you saying that Solskjaer can get the same amount of ability, the same results as Pochettino could from this squad?
I'm saying that if Pochettino comes to the club, nothing changes.
The question is... Pochettino or Solskjaer, who will get United more points this season with these players?
It's an early start of the season. If I look at last season, what he did, he finished third. So if Pochettino can come in and get this team to finish third, then I'll take my hat off to him. Because United finishing third last season, in my opinion, was a huge feat.
But we know it's a very different playing field. Chelsea couldn't make any signings last season. Arsenal were in transition under Arteta. Pochettino was sacked. Mourinho came in. Everything has changed now in that the chasing pack have galvanised somewhat. And if Manchester United finish third this season, no doubt about it, that is an excellent achievement.
100%.
Given. But who is more likely to lead them to third, Solskjaer or Pochettino?
Yeah, I see where your argument's coming from, and you would arguably say Pochettino because of what he's done. But at the end of the day, it's looking at, and you're saying because
well, that's
all,
why you get rid of that's
hit.
Why you get rid of Ollie then.
Sorry, but no, because
surely that's why you get rid of Ollie then.
The situation is that everybody talks about Manchester United need a manager that's won things, that's done things, that's been there, has got the trophies. They've had that. And it didn't work.
But this isn't about what's happened in the past, about who they can bring in. Who is the better coach between Pochettino and Solskjaer? Who is more likely to lead United to some semblance of achievement this season with the players that they have? And the answer is Pochettino, isn't it, Danny? And that's okay to say.
No, I would agree with that. Yeah, Pochettino's an unbelievable coach. There's no question about that. But what I'm saying is we're not talking about Pochettino at Spurs. We're talking about Pochettino coming to Manchester United that has huge issues. You can't, everyone's laying the blame on a manager. It was Mourinho's fault. It was Van Gaal's fault. It was Moyes' fault. It's Solskjaer's fault.
But this is this is the hand you've been dealt. Woodward's not going anywhere. There's no sporting director coming in. This is it. This is what you've got to play with. So you bring in a coach who you think can get the best out of this team, and in that sense, maybe it is Pochettino, or do you stick with Ollie and you keep complaining about not bringing in more players, and you keep moaning about the board, and you keep giving him a pass because overall it's to the detriment of the fans and detriment to the team because you're not going to be achieving what you could.
So you then continue to have a lack of consistency. So what you do,
but you're consistently bang average under Ollie, aren't you? That's the problem.
What I'm saying is, Dan, you bring another manager in, right? All of a sudden, Pochettino comes in, then he buys players in January. All of a sudden, you've got players from six different managers in a Manchester United squad.
But who's Ollie brought in? Ollie's brought in what? Maguire, Van de Beek didn't play, Daniel James, Ighalo.
That's what I'm saying. So you've got players from Solskjaer, you've got players from Mourinho.
But he hasn't brought in very good players.
Pardon?
Ollie hasn't brought in very good players. So why would you trust him again?
What I'm saying to you is, Dan, is that if Pochettino comes in as a manager, right, he is going to have in his matchday squad players from Sir Alex Ferguson, players from David Moyes, players from Van Gaal, players from Mourinho, players from Solskjaer. So he's going to have six different players from six different managers.
It's called coaching. It's called coaching. No, that's why we think Pochettino is a better coach.
Why should that
matter? Because you have to coach players.
So you don't think when a manager comes in, they want to stamp their own authority and bring their own players in? So what are you going to do? Are you going to go around again and say, right, I tell you what, we'll just go around in another circle. We'll bring another manager in. We'll give him £200 million. And when things aren't working right and we don't get what we want, we'll sack him as well. Then we'll spend another £200 million, then another £200 million. At some point, it has to stop. Well, because with any club, in order to have success, you need continuity. It's as simple as that. So you can get Pochettino, who's a wonderful
coach.
Look
at Liverpool.
But there's going to be the same problem.
Look at Liverpool. Look at Liverpool and look at City, right? When Pep came in and when Klopp came in, right?
Yeah. What did they do?
But what you could see was the progression. They were getting rid of players and bringing players in. You're talking about, so Pep's inherited players from three or four different City managers. So what he's done is, from the very beginning, the curve was going like that. He was getting players out and getting a one better in, and getting players out and getting one better in.
100%. So
there was always a progression.
Yeah.
Well, what's Ollie's progression? Ollie's doing this. Fantastic.
No.
Give him the job.
Fantastic run. Listen, I'm not saying, what I'm saying to you is Guardiola and Jurgen Klopp, they are miles better managers, miles better coaches than Solskjaer. No debate there whatsoever, right? But Manchester City,
which is why we're talking about Pochettino getting the job.
Right. But what I'm saying is,
your own question.
Guardiola goes to Manchester City, first season, finishes fourth. Second season, things don't suit him, gets rid of a goalkeeper that he brought in himself, brings another goalkeeper in. Next season, things don't suit him. So he brings players in, so eventually it becomes his team. United have got players from six different managers in their squad. Man City don't have that. Liverpool don't have that. You know why? Because they have continuity.
You weren't listening. Danny, you weren't listening to what I said. Whilst Klopp and Pep were doing this, there was progression. You could see where they were going. You could see what they were trying to do.
Yeah.
And you can't see that with Ollie. So if there's no progression and you don't know what's going on because you're too busy having 10 good games, 10 rotten ones, 10 good ones, 10 rotten, and there's a guy around who I think we would all agree is a better coach.
Yeah.
If you're Manchester United, supposedly the biggest club in the world, why don't you get the best guy available?
Because, Stevie, what you're going to have then, you know when you're talking about Klopp and Guardiola, like I say, they're on a pedestal on their own. Unbelievable managers. When Klopp and Guardiola took over Liverpool and Manchester City, respectively, Solskjaer wasn't manager of Manchester United. They had another two managers to get through yet before Solskjaer came in. So if Solskjaer had gone in at the same time as Guardiola...
I don't care, Danny. I couldn't care less if they had 100. If you've got a coach
Yes.
You're coaching your team. I don't care what your name is. Mm-hmm. And there's a better coach available. What do you do? Ah, no, we don't. He's a nice guy. No. If you're ambitious, you go and get the best guy available. And the best guy available right now is Pochettino.
I'm not disagreeing with you that he's an unbelievable coach and he's a better coach than Solskjaer. What I'm telling you is...
So go and get him, he's available.
Pardon?
So get him then. He's available. He's better than the one you've got, so go and get him. That's what happens with football.
And do you,
I've got a centre forward that scores 10 goals and I've got a guy who guarantees me 15. I go and get the guy with 15. I don't settle for the guy with 10 or 12 goals.
And do you honestly think, with the situation that United find themselves in, that a new manager is going to change things? Because it's been going for 7 years now and no one's managed to change anything. And we've had better managers than Pochettino come through the door and they've not been able to fix
it. Right, well, let's ask it a different way then.
Yeah.
With what's going on at United now, do you think Solskjaer is going to turn that around?
Do I think he's going to turn it around? What the start to this season?
With what they've got, do you think Solskjaer is going to turn that around?
Right. Well, he finished third last season, and they won two of their first.
I just asked a simple question. It's a simple answer. It's a yes or no answer.
The performances will get better? Yes, 100% they'll get better. They're not going to challenge. but the performances will get better. 100% they'll get better. But what I'm saying is, I'm not disagreeing with you about Pochettino. 100% I'm saying he's a better coach. But if you bring him into a situation that United are in,
Pete,
you ain't going to change anything.
Are you still there? Pete! Are you fucking
asleep? You're not going to change anything.
My electricity bill's going to be through the roof with all these lights down here.
Oh dear.
Nothing's going to change. So from the outside looking, you say, hey, bring a different manager in. We've had two of the best in the world. What happened? Nothing. Not going to change.
We've got a better coach available. But no, we won't go and get them.
Here's the issue, and it's the unknown, isn't it, Danny? And that's the problem. You mentioned Everton and the way that Carlo Ancelotti has been backed. There's no guarantee that if Manchester United brought in James or Allen or people that Everton have, that Solskjaer could get the best out of them as Ancelotti has, because Ancelotti's a better coach.
Dan, this really pains me to say. United wouldn't have signed those players.
But even even if they did, there's no guarantee, is there?
Dan, you're wasting your time. Dan, you're wasting your time.
No, see, I'm being serious. You're talking about the likes of Rodriguez. Yeah. You're talking about Alan and things like that. Players that should be potentially Manchester United sides. The difference is Everton have Marcel Brands, and Manchester United have Ed Woodward, who's trying to be a director of football. That's why they keep missing out on these signings on a continuous basis. Because Manchester United's still at pull, but they can't sign the players. So there's a common denominator somewhere in all of this.
That is the longest segment we have ever done in the history of ESPN FC.
We need to enjoy this.
Thank you very much, gentlemen, for a lot more from the boys.
We are bonus.
Be sure to check out Extra Time available on our YouTube channel. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match. With Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's electricebikes.com.
Let's focus now, shall we, on the ins and outs at Bayern Munich. We know, of course, Thiago Coutinho, Perisic all gone. Their big signing of the summer, Leroy Sané, has been joined by a number of players over the last couple of days. Marc Roch has come in, as is Buna Sarr, Choupo-Moting, and Douglas Costa returns to the club. Let's welcome in, shall we, Steve Cherundolo is with us, as is Archie Rintut, to discuss Bayern's movements. Archie, I want to start with Douglas Costa because he didn't exactly leave on good terms when he left Bayern the first time round, being described as a mercenary.
That's exactly the point I was going to go to first.
Oh, well, now you have to do some work.
I know, right? That's the first point gone. Yeah, honorary president Uli Hoeneß has come up in a video clip in the last few days with him calling Douglas Costa a mercenary back at the time. Too surprising that Uli Hoeneß is saying such things. I mean, he said that Jerome Boateng was finished at the club last summer, and look what happened to Jerome Boateng. So it's still a surprise to see him come back, but he certainly brings with him an unbelievable turn of pace. And I think that for Bayern, it was about having numbers in their squad. We've seen that with the performances against Hoffenheim and against Hertha in the Bundesliga in the last week, that they do need strength in depth. And Douglas Costa is not going to be first choice. I wouldn't say he's going to be in the top three either. He'll be competing with Jamal Musiala as well for a spot in the team. And I think it's a good signing for what it is. And also it brings, I think, some fresh hunger into the team. Ivan Perisic and Coutinho did their roles well last season, but Costa didn't win the Champions League with Bayern during his time in the club. So I think he'll be hungry to emulate that success.
And these players, of course, Steve, join a side that have conceded 9 goals in their last 3 games. What's going on at the back for Bayern?
Well, they have added Sarr, who is an experienced right back, who could help Benji Pavard on his side, who has looked a bit fatigued in the past couple of weeks, to be honest with you. But I think, you know, Bayern has a team and a schedule who needs to be able to rotate. And, you know, as we saw in the past couple of weeks against Hoffenheim and even against Dortmund in the Super Cup and now against Hertha, but then they weren't able to do that. They weren't able to rotate. So now they have a deeper squad which will enable them to rotate and to rest some of their better players or players who can make differences in games, really, and to put them in the games that matter. So it's important for these younger players, especially like Richards, to get some minutes and some games to, you know, help out these older defenders for Bayern Munich right now to get them on back track.
Steve, you mentioned there, obviously, Chris Richards, a massive moment for him, starting his first game for Bayern. How would you assess his performance?
I thought he did very well. You can still see he's a young defender. He still makes a few mistakes on the ball here and there, but he set up a wonderful goal for Lewandowski. He gets up and down the line. He's a little fatigued at the moment, but that's fine. His body and his game is not used to the speed of the Bundesliga yet, and it was a fast pass game, pace game against Berlin last night. So I thought he had a great start. You know, unfortunately for him, they have brought in another right back, an experienced right back in Sarr, so it may cut back on his minutes moving forward, but there may also be opportunities for him at the center back position.
Meanwhile, the focus, we have talked a lot about Borussia Dortmund and the performance from Gio Reyna with that hat trick of assists in that 4-0 victory at the weekend against Freiburg. Steve, just as an American, I imagine you loved watching this.
Yeah, love seeing Gio out there in the field, especially teaming up, you know, with Eddie Haaland. He seems to understand him very well. And you can see in the celebrations, too, that they like each other. They genuinely like each other. So there's a friendship there and a cooperation on the pitch as well. So it's really, a dream team moving forward. And he's got 3 assists this past weekend, 2 for Haaland. So it's something that we definitely have to continue to watch and expect a whole lot of more of you. He's been fantastic, and it's a great thing to see.
How high is his ceiling, Steve?
Well, every time I see him play, you know, I see his father. I played with his father for a number of years in the men's national team. So, but what a lot of people don't know, his mother was a fantastic player as well. So he has a lot of going on in that gene pool as far as soccer smarts go. So it's, I think the sky's the limit for him. You know, we'll see how he develops physically. But as far as his playing IQ goes, he's very far along. So I think we're going to see a lot of good things out of Gio. I do not think Borussia Dortmund will be his last big club.
Yeah, it's great, isn't it, Archie? It's great to have this young, exciting talent as one of the faces of the league.
And that partnership that Steve mentions with Erling Haaland as well, you could very easily lip read what they were saying to each other, or what Haaland was directing towards Reina, because he said to him after one of the goals, "You pass to me, I score." That simple. So I think that you can see that Reina's having to put up with a lot of energy from Haaland, particularly in the celebrations. You can imagine that Erling Haaland may be a bit of a wearing presence after a little while, but I think that what Reina's done is that, you know, I think particularly when you have the dribbling ability that he has, there can be a temptation to overcomplicate things. But his assists to Erling Haaland have just been simple passes where Haaland shows him where he wants the ball and he'll just play a simple forward pass, and the diagonal run by Erling Haaland and the finish then does the rest. So really impressed with Gio Reyna. In Germany here, they're getting very excited about him as well. I noticed that the commentator as well was very keen to point out just how young he was, because he doesn't even have his driver's license yet.
Wow. You look at this, Stephen, you look at this young crop of American players. Have we ever seen this sort of quality that is so well established so early on?
No, I don't think so. It's really exciting moving towards, you know, World Cup in 2 years and 4 years beyond that, a World Cup in North America. So it's really exciting for U.S. soccer right now. You know, the key for these young players is now to gel in the national team as well. So to build a strong core of players and a bond between those players to be a very difficult team or a side to beat. So that would be the key moving forward, obviously, for Greg Berhalter, the coach. You know, he knows what he's doing and he knows that. But that's the key for these young stars who are playing at these massive clubs is to put club ball away for those few national team trips and become a group or become a family for the U.S. national team to get results.
What do we say about Haaland, meanwhile, that we haven't said before, Archie?
I think I just did, didn't I?
That he's
speaking about his energy.
That's it.
I think that what I will say is that hearing from his opponents, the Freiburg captain Christian Günther was just saying it's difficult because he uses pretty much every chance he gets. So I think he's got that reputation in the league. He was named already the shooting star of the Bundesliga by Kicker magazine over here last season. But the most interesting thing to me is, what's this battle going to be like for the Bundesliga Torjägerkanone, the golden shoe of the Bundesliga, between Erling Haaland and Robert Lewandowski this season? Okay, Andrei Kramaric is top of the scoring charts in the Bundesliga right now, but I think it's going to quickly crystallise into Haaland against Lewandowski. And that's going to be something interesting to watch, particularly because Leon Goretzka, Bayern midfield motor, was saying after the game that he'd actually said to Lewandowski before his 4 goals against Hertha that, you know, you better get going quickly because the way that the other players are playing. And Lewandowski did quite well.
Yeah.
So that's one battle I'm really looking forward to this season.
Steve, defending against Haaland must be a nightmare because of the number of assets that he brings to the table.
Yeah, he's big. He knows how to use his body. He can beat you in the air. He can beat you on the ground. He's fast. But what really shines to me in his game is his ability to learn, and he gets better. He learns from defenders. He learns from goalkeepers. And I know he, in the Super Cup, he had a big chance against Manuel Neuer. Neuer stuck out his big paw and made a great save. But that's something that Haaland is going to learn from. He's going to go the next time to the other corner, the next time he goes up against Manuel Neuer. So this is the scary thing about this forward. He's already has so many tools, but he also has the brains to go with it. He's going to get better and better, I fear. So I think, I think Archie had a good point. It's going to be a great race between those two, but I think Haaland beats out Lewandowski this year. I mean, wow. Lewandowski had a fantastic season last year, and it's going to be very difficult to replicate. So I got my money on Haaland this year.
Wow. Steve's saying that he can't see Lewandowski getting into double figures this year. Archie, what do you think?
The key thing is we had one of the rare things in Robert Lewandowski's career happen in March, and the corona pandemic covered over it, but he got injured. And that is something that just does not happen to Robert Lewandowski. You go back all the way through to his time in Poland, and he'd not missed back-to-back games for his clubs until the corona pandemic came, and that covered over the injury. So the key thing is, can Robert Lewandowski stay fit? Hansi Flick, the Bayern coach, was saying that Lewandowski scored 4 yesterday, but he wasn't even at 100%, which sounds a bit like a threat, if anything, that he can get even better. But I think that Lewandowski's still going to be the... It sounds like sitting on the fence, but I just can't see past the way that Lewandowski makes goals for himself from situations where he's not the favourite to score from those positions, like his second goal from Chris Richards' assist the other day. I think that's what makes him out as the number one goal scorer in the league. Erling Haaland hasn't quite shown that just yet. He's got everything, but the way that Lewandowski makes those goals out of nothing, I think is probably the standout asset that he has.
And what's the name of the top scorer, the Golden Shoe again, Archie? Let me get this right.
The Torjägerkanone.
Right, thank you very much, boys. Much appreciated. Germany, of course, in action in the Nations League this weekend as they take on Ukraine. That game live on ESPN Plus at 2:45 Eastern.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
As always, be sure to check out the latest edition of the Gavin Jules podcast. Sid Lowe joins them on the latest edition, talking, amongst other things, about Antoine Griezmann. Gavin Jules with me now to talk about the fact that Ronald Koeman has come out, Jules, critical of him, saying he should have taken at least one of those chances in the game at the weekend against Sevilla. And also now, the French national team manager having a word.
Yeah, that's right, Didier Deschamps saying that he spoke to Griezmann and that Griezmann, in a way, is not too happy that he's not playing more centrally. Like Koeman, if you remember in the summer, had a long discussion with him and told him and told everyone else, we will play Griezmann in his best position to get the best out of him. And clearly that's not the case because he's playing out wide on the right-hand side. And yeah, of course, he missed those two chances. I think Antoine himself knows that he should have taken at least one of them. And even the way he took them was not good enough either. But you could also understand his frustration of being almost an outcast in that team already so early in the season, where he really thought with Koeman it was a fresh start. There were obviously all the rumours about Messi leaving as well that I think would have made Griezmann's life at Barcelona simpler, because, and that's what we said with Sid on the podcast, on the show with Gab, they're just playing in the same positions. It would be very hard for any manager in the whole world to be able to play them together and get the best out of them both, because Messi and Griezmann are often in the same area, they're quite similar players, and unless one is in completely off position and unhappy, that you can't play them both together.
So why is Koeman throwing him under the bus then, Gab?
You know what? Stuff like this really, really annoys me. Now, I tend to give the manager the benefit of the doubt, right? Some players respond well to public criticisms. Others prefer private criticism. Griezmann, I think, is the first guy who knows he screwed up. But you know what? The thing is, Ronald, the window is shut. Memphis Depay isn't walking through that door. Luis Suarez isn't coming back. Ronaldo, the original Ronaldo, isn't coming back. Gary Lineker sure as hell isn't coming back. This is it. This is your center forward now. It's either him or it's Braithwaite. There's nobody else. Nada. Nothing. So you have to be 100% sure that when you talk to him, you do everything you can to make him happy, to make him wanted, and to motivate him. Now, if Griezmann is a bit of a masochist and he's like, you know what? I like being thrown under the bus in public. I like it when my manager highlights my mistakes in public. And I like it even more when he gets his little friend, my national team manager, to go and highlight those mistakes. That's what really motivates me to do the best. Then great, then you did the right thing. Otherwise, I'm not sure how this is helpful.
Koeman played at the highest level, Jules. This is what I don't get as well. You know, it's not just a flippant off-the-cuff comment. He knows what damage this can do going forward.
That's right, but I think that's really him, to be fair. This is not, we've seen him having arguments with a lot of the players before in pretty much every club he's been to. He's quite direct, he's quite bold, he's quite tough, while certainly he wants people to see that side of him. But I agree with Gab, sometimes he works with people and he doesn't work with others. Antoine Griezmann is sad, you know, things are not going well for him, he's not happy, and I don't think he needs, on the back of all of that, his manager going out and saying, you know what, he had two chances there and he missed them, to make him even feel worse, because that's exactly what that would have done. That would have made him feel worse, and he probably would have felt, you know what, I didn't need this. You know, can you cut me some slack? I'm playing out of position when I thought this could be a good season for me, that I could come back and play my best and be a bit like the player I was before Atletico Madrid, and instead, I end up myself playing on the right-hand side, and it's just not working out for me. And then on back of that, you go and back and just tell the whole world that, oh yeah, but look, that was rubbish. That was dreadful. I just don't think that helps at all.
Gentlemen, as always, thank you very much. Barcelona, of course, dropping their first points of the new season with that draw against Sevilla. They remain fifth in the table, chasing Real Madrid at the top of the tree. That's it then. That brings us to the end of today's show. Thank you very much to Gab and Jules for their insight on transfer deadline day. If you want more from Danny and Stevie, and let's face it, who doesn't? Be sure to stay tuned, as Extra Time is next. Welcome into Extra Time. Stevie and Danny still with us after our marathon discussion about Manchester United. The first question, though, is about the team that beat them. Stevie, we finally admit that you were wrong about Jose's Spurs team, thinking that they are not good enough to finish top four. The fact that you predicted United to finish above Spurs is a disgrace.
Who sent that?
Reguilón is the GOAT. May just be a Spurs fan.
Right. I don't know whether they noticed, but they were playing against 10 men for a bit, what, 70 minutes? I would expect them to win handsomely, playing against 10 men. I bet he wasn't saying that after 30 seconds when Sanchez did his usual and brought down Martial.
Yeah, but they were good before. They were good at 2-1 as well, Stevie, to be fair.
Aye. Well, oh yeah, but come on, Dan. I mean, horrendous defending, otherwise they don't score. Don't get me wrong, they played some good football and they did, yeah, but they've been less than flowing and stellar this year themselves.
Well, would you like to change your mind, Stevie?
Oh.
Well, it's tight. Because there's not much in it, in my opinion, between the two sides. Don't think there's much in it.
So is that a yes or a no?
I'm going to say yes.
You change your mind. Spurs will
finish. I'll tell you what, I'm going to say yes, and I'll tell you why. Because if nothing else...
Right.
Mourinho somehow will tighten Spurs up. I'm not so sure Ollie knows how to tighten Man United up, so there you go. I've changed my mind. I will go yes.
Who finishes higher, Danny, Spurs or United?
I think you've got to say at the moment, Spurs. Transfer business has been brilliant. Wow. Reguilón coming in, Bale coming in, and Ndombele, you know, starting to show what he's capable of. You know, you've got Son and you've got Kane. And Mourinho as well. You know, they made some great signings. No surprise that they brought a director of football in, and it's helped massively with the signings to bring players in. But yeah, I've got to say at the moment, Tottenham, especially the fact what they've just dealt with. You know, the Europa League, they qualified with that. They've had the League Cup that they've gone through as well. So he's done unbelievably well, Mourinho, and he deserves a lot of credit. And at the moment, 100%, I would put them finishing above Manchester United.
Did you ever...
Why didn't he do that at United then?
What, bring the players in that he wanted? Well, do you want to go back and have another half hour segment?
Let's do that again. Steady, Dan. Whoa, Dan. Whoa there, Dan.
I'm not going to do that again.
Whoa, Danny. Whoa, Danny.
Okay. Did you ever have a day in your playing careers where everything went wrong for your team in a match, such as what happened to Liverpool? Of course, Liverpool conceding, they were terrible, but they did concede three deflected goals. Did you have a game where you just felt everything was against you that comes to mind?
If pre-season counts, yes.
Go on.
I think Real Sociedad, just after they were beginning to be settled in La Liga, I think it was 7-0 they beat us at their place in a pre-season game. We were absolutely shell-shocked. It was like, what? You just like, what chance have we got this year? Because this team beat us 7-0. But it was pre-season, so we got away with it.
Danny?
Oh, yeah, I had a few. 7-2. 7-2 at Goodison Park. We started the game brilliantly. We were 4-0 down before we knew it.
Wow.
Kept chasing the game. I think we had one at Chelsea as well, maybe 7-1 or 7-0, when Chelsea were, you know, they were different class. But yeah, those are the games you've got to come. You go into the dressing room, you hold your hands up, the team, you're getting absolutely, you know, annihilated by a team that's far better than you, and then you try and put things right. But yeah, I'm sure I had a few more of those days than what Stevie did.
Yeah, it leads us on to our next question. The most goals.
I'll tell you what, Dan.
The most goals your team ever conceded, right, that you were part,
Dan,
of. Yeah, go on, Stevie.
Dan. I just remember, you know why I remember that? Not just because of the 7-0 drubbing, but our goalkeeper, Grobbelaar.
Yep.
I was sharing a room with him, and outside the window, there was like a ledge that was probably about a foot wide.
Right.
Was all the way down, because all the boys' rooms were all, and we were away up the top floor. And this balloon got out the window and was crawling about, it went about 20 yards down there. And he must have been about, I don't know what, 150 feet up, and went into one of the other boys' room just to play a prank on them and give them a fright. It was,
wow,
like that.
Goodness me.
You're no right in the head.
No. Who would have thought you'd be the sensible one?
Well, that was
Grobbelaar.
What? That's what Grobbelaar was like.
So the most you conceded in a game, Danny, you mentioned seven. Is it,
yeah,
seven? Is that the record?
Seven. Yeah, could have been a lot more.
Stevie?
Yeah, seven. Sheffield Wednesday, we got beat by Blackburn 7-3.
Didn't you come on as a sub?
Brought me on at 3-0.
Did you come on as a sub in that game?
Aye.
Yeah.
I did. I came on after 30 minutes. We were 3-0 down.
Nice.
Just to tighten things up.
And your biggest win, Stevie, was the 9-0, yeah? Because you got two against Palace.
Ah, wow, Palace, yeah.
Yeah, 9-0. Crystal Palace, aye.
Danny, your biggest
win? We actually beat Fulham.
Oh, go on.
No, it was over two legs, though. It was like a 10-0 or something.
Well, that doesn't count, does it? Why'd you bring that up? Danny?
No,
I think mine was four, maybe four against Newcastle, 4-0. Scored a great free kick as well.
Oh, banging on about that all the time. Is Jack Grealish the most creative English player at the moment, Danny? Should he be starting for the national team?
Yep, I think he should be. I think what he did at Villa, you know, we talk about players that are performing at the top clubs. He was performing at a club that just fought off relegation, and the way that the start they've had to this season, you can see better players have been brought into the club. He's gone up another level. So yeah, he would be starting for England in my opinion at the moment. He's had an unbelievable start to the season, captain of Villa and leading by example. So yeah, 100% I'd have him in the starting 11.
Danny, how do you live the last hours of deadline day when you're supposed to sign with a new team?
God, I've done this before. I remember it was, I was at Sunderland and I was going back to Stoke, and Tony Pulis had got in touch with my agent and said, listen, the deal's nearly done. But I had to wait. And then I had to get on the motorway and then drive back quickly and get things sorted quite quickly. So it can be a little bit topsy-turvy. The morning, you're at one club, and then by the evening, you're at another club. But that's just part and parcel of playing football and being a footballer, you know, when it goes down to the last minute.
Stevie, should Liverpool start Fabinho over Gomez at centre-back from now on? That's yes for those listening on the podcast.
I would suggest till things settle down.
Yep. How do things settle down?
They don't concede 7 goals.
Well, you get. Well, then he's not playing. Yeah, exactly. How does that help?
You get some performances down. You get the whole team settled down, and then you start reintroducing Joe Gomez quietly.
Stevie, who was the worst on the weekend, Maguire or Trent?
You got to say Maguire, from because
he plays
he's
for
way
Manchester
more
United.
Experienced than Trent. He's way more experienced, and he's the captain. So he's if there's one guy you have to rely on, it's got to be your captain. And that's partly the reason why he is your captain, because you're getting a level of performance consistently. So I would have to say Maguire.
Danny?
Yeah, I think when you look at it like that, you know, I've got to agree. The captain, you know, he's the one that needs to lead by example. Trent Alexander-Arnold, you know, still relatively young player. But I would agree with Stevie on that one.
Stevie, better to lose one game by giving up 7 goals or lose 7 games by 1 goal?
100% correct.
Right, well, that's not the answer.
You know, as a coach, when I was...
It's when a I was, question, when it I was wasn't coaching a statement. Which option are you going for?
Oh, sorry. Oh, it's a pity. Who's going to say you'd rather lose 7 in a row by 1? I mean, really? Who's going to say that? Listen, as a coach, there's actually usually a game during the year where just every single thing can go wrong and does go wrong. And so it's also a good excuse because, you know, you go in the dressing room and some of the younger players, you've got to pick the chin off the floor, you know, they're distraught. So you just go, you know what, lads? Listen, there's always a game, you get 1.
Right.
And you've just had your game for the season. Let's go home and get started again. Convince them of that.
For Stevie, after Villa put 7 past Liverpool, is it time to sack the throwing coach?
Well, had they coughed the ball up from throwing for the 7 goals, then I would have said, oh, absolutely, 100%.
But yes.
I don't think that's how it turned out.
The final question is, what time does the party start? We're recording now, just as deadline. Is party done, anyone? Anyone paying any attention to me? No, I don't know if Thomas Partey has signed. Pete, is Partey signed? Yes, he says. Is that a good signing? Danny?
Yes. Yeah, they've done some great business, Arsenal, and they've needed that defensive midfielder. I think it's an absolutely brilliant signing. I think his buyout clause was something like 45 million as well.
Yeah, 45 million.
So great signing. Unbelievable signing.
That's it. Right, Stevie, go and get those beers out the freezer. Thank you very much, Danny, as always. We'll be back tomorrow for more. Until then, goodbye.